This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and the number to call, and you'll hear Robin's melodious voice, is 877-217-5757. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. And signature support for our program is from Subaru Baton Rouge, SubaruBR.com. We begin a short visit, but an important one, with Shannon Abney, Vice President and Chief Development Officer for Volunteers of America South Central Louisiana. She's been with this group for 12 years. And to date, she's raised about $4 million for early care and education in our state. So important work, and there are some tax credits that many may not be aware of that are significant, not only for VOASCLA, but for the public at large. And let's start there, Shannon. We went through this a year or so ago, but I know a lot of people probably are oblivious to this. I was until the conversation a year ago, and it's something a lot of people can capitalize upon.
Yes, thanks for having me. This is a really unique program created by our state, and this program this is the Louisiana School Readiness Tax Credit Program. And through this program, businesses with a Louisiana tax ID number are eligible to make a donation directly in their community for up to $5,000 a year, and they receive a 100% refundable dollar-for-dollar state tax credit.
All right, so you can go up to $5,000 and get $5,000 back? Is that what I just heard?
That is what you just heard. And what is so unique and wonderful about this program is while a regular donation is tax deductible, this is a refundable state tax credit. So every dollar you give, you get back on your taxes. Even if you don't owe taxes, you actually get your $5,000 back in the form of a refund. So it's a win-win for businesses and for the children in the community.
Do you have any information about the number of businesses who are taking advantage of this?
Absolutely. I work directly with all of these businesses, gotten to know them really well because most businesses that donate, they do it year after year. Last year, we had about 122 businesses. Most of them were in Greater Baton Rouge, but we also have businesses in the Lafayette area, a few in New Orleans. And all these funds are invested through our early childhood program. And we serve over 22 parishes in the state. So I do hope to expand this program more into the Lake Charles, Lafayette area. But right now, most of our donors are still in the Greater Baton Rouge area.
And the money, the $4 million you've raised, where does it go? You're telling me it goes to this endeavor, and it's an important one. But I suspect this endeavor has a lot of tentacles.
Yes, definitely. So it's in a nutshell, we have an early childhood program called Partnerships in Childcare. We work with over 400 early learning centers, preschools, and family home providers in the state. And we provide services to those daycare centers. We work directly with the Louisiana Department of Education. We're what's called the Designated Resource and Referral Agency. And so we work with them on a regular basis anyway, but through the tax credit, we're able to fund new, exciting projects and really make an impact and go further than what our contract with the state allows.
Well, Robin Dow reminds me that Dolly Parton is involved in this in a peripheral way. How so?
So with the funds that we raise every year, so last year I raised $550,000 here in the area, and we were able to fund $40,000 for the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. So that allowed children in the Greater Baton Rouge parishes to receive a book directly to their home every month from birth to age 5, regardless of their family income. So it allows them to increase early literacy, which is important for our state, our governor. And this year, our governor's matching 50% of that. So we're really excited about the program.
All right. A listener says, is this available for individual taxpayers?
Well, that's a very important thing. And I'm forgetting one of the most important things about it is that this is for only Louisiana businesses with a tax ID number. It can be taken on your individual income tax return or your corporate return, depending on how your business is set up. But the one stipulation, individuals are not eligible, but the donations do have to be made by December 31st of this year to be claimed on your 2023 taxes. So it's a busy time for us right now.
All right, so December 31st as in 26 days from now.
Absolutely. And most businesses that do this, they give their donation in the last month of the year They might talk to me and say they're going to make the donation in the last, I'd say, 30 to 45 days. Everyone just starts mailing their checks in. They can mail their checks, or they can go to our website at voascla.org/SRTC and make a donation online.
voascla.org. When we start getting into slashes, I think people probably zone out, but you can find it.
Absolutely.
And $5,000, now do most businesses go all the way up to five, or they do something in between?
I would say that most businesses give $5,000. Sometimes if a business only owes $3,000, they might wait, see what their tax liability is, and, you know, just go with that. As I said earlier, I mean, the best part about this tax credit in my mind is you get to take your tax dollars, invest them directly in your local community and make an impact. So I just think it's something that, you know, is a win-win for everybody.
And VOASCLA, a listener notes, that this is a new moniker, isn't it?
Yes. So VOASCLA, we used to be Volunteers of America Greater Baton Rouge, and now we have changed our name to Volunteers of America South Central Louisiana. And we did that about a year and a half ago because we serve 27 parishes across the state, Greater Baton Rouge, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and Alexandria. So we felt our name better reflected the work that we do.
And we're speaking with Shannon Abney, the Vice President and Chief Development Officer of VOASCLA. And to date, you personally have raised $4 million. I suspect some others have raised amounts as well. And Shannon spent 10 years working for a company in the private sector before coming
Absolutely.
This way. So what's the difference between working in the private sector and doing this?
Well, I had a long career in business consulting, but I think it really kind of prepped me, especially because I'm working with so many businesses now across the state. But the main thing is you go to work every day and you're helping people live a better life, helping folks in Louisiana that are struggling to live more independently and just improving lives. And that's a great feeling.
And she is a graduate of Louisiana State University, Bachelor of Science degree in finance. Who was your favorite professor at LSU?
Oh my gosh, Dr. Stotts. I don't know if you remember Dr. Stotts. He was my finance banking professor, and I loved him. He was amazing because mm-hmm. he had a lot of private experience as well. And every day he would give it, he always said, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And honestly, I've never forgotten that.
Well, I am impressed that you could name somebody, and you did so without hesitation. I asked a couple of really smart people recently one went to UL and the other went to LSU, who their favorite professors were, and they told me honestly, they said, I can't remember any of my professors.
Some
kids kind of, they go through college doing other things other than going to class and remembering their professors.
Well, I was actually in my mind thinking Dr. Culbertson or Dr. Stotts, but
Culbertson, a legendary guy. Yeah.
Yes, he was my economics professor.
But this is an important endeavor, and anything about Dolly Parton's behind, I'm okay with. She's strong stuff. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer now is Dolly Rebecca Parton, who'll be 78 years old next month. Can you believe that?
I can't believe that. And her love of early literacy for children and families is amazing, and it's exactly what we're trying to do at Volunteers of America.
So the short version of this is that if you're a business or a business owner, you can contribute up to $5,000, get it all back, and help the cause. So it sounds like a pretty good deal.
Absolutely. I think everyone can agree that there's no better investment than in Louisiana's children and getting them ready for kindergarten, which will help them succeed in school and in life.
All right. Well, thank you, Shannon Abney. Good luck, and let's stay in touch.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
And we're joined now by the Pulitzer winner, Peter Kovacs, who ran the Baton Rouge Advocate for a decade after a career largely spent at the Times-Picayune, and then he was around when the Picayune became part of the Advocate, and John Georges has conquered the publishing world in Louisiana. He has several other publications as well, and Peter was, I guess, the right-hand man. He was running the show in the newsroom, and I must say the newsroom was perking along pretty well, and there have been some changes since he left, as there always is when there's a new sheriff in town. But it's good to hear your voice again. Joining us telephonically is one Peter Kovacs. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. And how's retirement going, Peter?
Retirement's very relaxing. I live on a lake, so I can just go fishing anytime I want.
Well, and not always. The water got pretty low for a while, didn't it?
The water was very low, and over the weekend, the first rainy night, we got about 4.5 inches of rain, and that added 20 inches to the lake.
So you immediately were out with your rod and reel, I'm sure.
So I went, it was hard to launch a boat, and you know, when the water was so low,
yeah,
but now it's back to normal.
And Peter is one of those people who grew up on the East Coast, went to Alabama, then went to New Orleans, and then finished his career in Baton Rouge, and he stayed. So that's a testament to our community that a man of the world decided to spend the rest of his life potentially in Baton Rouge with his beautiful wife. And we'll talk more with Peter Kovacs, and we'll get to what's going on in the world of journalism after this 89.3-second timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. We're glad you're with us. And one of our favorite guests, Peter Kovacs, is with us and joining us telephonically. Peter is now unofficially retired, but he, I think, will always have a place at the table when it comes to a discussion about American journalism. And he performed well at the highest levels and was around a decade ago, a little more than that now, when John George has acquired the Advocate from the Manship family. And the Advocate is still around 7 days a week, and it is something that is not all that common in markets of this size. And the Advocate, of course, swallowed up the Picayune, and Peter was involved in that. And he was around when the Picayune got sold, and that was a brutal endeavor in which, as we know, the New Orleans newspaper for a time was 3 days a week. And Peter, I noticed my old hometown of Little Rock, they cut out the print version, and now they're back to it. So, and they have a high circulation. So as much as the print version is maligned in many parts of our world, it still has cachet with people, particularly people of our vintage. Is it just a matter of time before we have no print except for national newspapers, or do you think there's staying power?
Well, I mean, the demise of print journalism has been predicted for much of my life. You know, when we were young, you know, people thought television and radio was going to kill print journalism. You know, in this century, people say the internet is going to kill print journalism, and it certainly damaged print journalism. But, you know, and there are a lot of communities that no longer have print newspapers. But, you know, I admire the Hussmans, and I think they are very good at understanding their market. And so I think in markets with local owners, you'll have print for a long time.
But as we know, there's some communities with no, as in zero, newspapers, and particularly in small towns, in which there used to be a local radio station and a local newspaper. A lot of the radio stations have gone dark, and a lot of the newspapers have closed. And as a result, we have fewer newspapers, we have fewer radio stations, we also have many fewer reporters. How much of that is reflective of the technology, which makes things a lot more efficient, or just the fact that, as you know, you get these orders from high to cut back so companies can meet the bottom line, or if they're a publicly traded company, get their stock up? What is the real catalyst for this?
You know, the worst thing that happened, I think, to the newspaper industry was when it was very profitable was consolidation of it into several chains. And you know, that was a result that happened, for example, at the Times-Picayune, which was acquired by the Newhouse family in the 1960s. People in Baton Rouge, you know, lived in a different universe, and I don't think they realized this was going on because the Manships owned the Advocate for years, and the Manships were well known in the community. I mean, a lot of people would know a member of the family. And so the Manships were very attentive to the needs of Baton Rouge. They understood Baton Rouge. But what happened with the Picayune was that the Newhouses didn't understand New Orleans, and they thought that they could print 3 days a week and people would just get used to it, and they were wrong. So, but in these communities where they have chain newspapers, you know, I don't think the people who make the decisions know anything about the communities.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org if you'd like to engage one of the best, Peter Kovacs, a man who is well short of 70 years, but he has decided to retire after a full life in journalism. And there's wear and tear, believe it or not, in newsrooms, perhaps not as much as there used to be. I'm old enough to remember when The Advocate had people smoking and even drinking in the newsroom, Peter Kovacs. Now it's a different environment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I was one of the people. I smoked pipes and cigars in newsrooms. I remember when I worked at the Birmingham News, which, by the way, no longer exists, they had a sort of famous political writer who kept a bottle of whiskey in his bottom drawer. And on election nights, he would partake of it while, you know, waiting to see how George Wallace did. But he could, you know, even under those circumstances, he could perform under pressure. Another thing, I don't know if you remember those days, but, you know, there used to be a photo dark room.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course. Generally the bosses didn't go in the photo dark room. And so people would disappear into the photo dark room and drink. That was another old technique.
Mm-hmm. Well, I recall when I was a student journalist at LSU in Tiger Stadium, we had the Reveille. And we had the radio station just right down the hall from each other. And there were people who actually went up in the attic, Peter, went up in the attic, and they were using marijuana. And can you imagine that in 1981? But it was going on at the old war school. And today it would be like, if it wasn't going on, it would be a story.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, the first time I ever went to an NFL football game, because they didn't have that in Alabama, was we moved here and we went to a Saints game. And in those days you could smoke in the Superdome. And my most vivid memory was, you know, we bought the cheapest seats at the top of it, you know, my wife and I, and we went there and it was very smoky because all the smoke rises. But there were people all around just smoking weed watching the Saints game. and of course, you know, now you need to smoke weed to watch a Saints game, but and in those days you did too, by the way.
Well, I recall in 1983 the Saints had never had a winning season. They were in their 18th year, and if they beat the Rams, they'd be 9-7 and make the playoffs, and a kicker named Mike Lansford kicked a last second field goal to beat the Saints. And it was so hazy in the dome that you could barely see the ball go through the uprights. Had to look at the officials to see if it was good or not because of all the smoking that was going on there. And I recall Jack Youngblood, the great defensive lineman for the Rams, said it was the toughest game he ever played in. And I said, because of the fans? He goes, no, because of the smoke. It was...
and, It was smoky in there.
It was smoky, and the turf was like falling on concrete. So it wasn't really a healthy environment, and today we take all these precautions to protect players, but in those days it was much different than it is now. But I know you're a big sports fan as well, and it's amazing the hate that is out there for Nick Saban in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Here's a guy who led LSU to a national championship. But people are suddenly all up in arms that Florida State, of all teams, didn't make the national playoffs and that Nick Saban and Alabama did, Peter. We love a villain, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And, you know, people, you know, Nick Saban, in addition to winning a national championship for LSU, really, you know, changed the trajectory of LSU football, you know, so that his two successors won a national championship and, you know, we'll see if his third successor can win a national championship. And
all within 4 years, too.
Might win another Heisman. You know, it's, but, you know, and, but people, you know, I think that now with time, less and less people really remember that. And so people still hate him. I bet the Michigan players were disappointed when they found out they were going to play Alabama.
I'm sure they were. They'd rather play Florida State, which has lost its quarterback. But for what it's worth, I looked this NCAA computer, and you can go to sportsreference.com, and you can look year by year to see how teams were ranked by the computer. LSU, for example, is ranked 22nd nationally by this computer. It has Florida State number one as the best team in America over the course of the season. So if that's the case, then the Seminoles got robbed. But I look back in the year of 1998, there was a team that went undefeated, 12-0, and was ranked number one by the computer, and they didn't go anywhere either. And the team that got robbed in 1998 was Tulane. They were the best team. Sean King and Tommy Bowden, right? And LSU that year went 4-7.
Yeah, I remember that team. That was a great Tulane team, and they went to the Liberty Bowl, which has now probably been renamed seven times after companies. You don't even know what they do. I like this LSU. Like, LSU is going to this bowl game, and it's named after a company. I have no idea what this company even does.
I know. They're playing Mighty Wisconsin. We'll be back with Peter Kovacs after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. We're visiting with Peter Kovacs, man of the world, Pulitzer winner, lives in Baton Rouge, grew up in the big city of New York, and moved to Alabama after going to Brown University, one of the great institutions of higher learning, and then shortly thereafter came to New Orleans. Spent most of his career there and then the last decade here in Baton Rouge, and he has stayed. He is here, and if you'd like to talk with him about the state of journalism, 877-217-5757. Now, we talked about the hate of Nick Saban. Well, hate sells, both in the stadium and in journalism. When Alabama plays LSU, and by the way, before Saban became coach, the price was the same on a ticket for every game, whether LSU is playing Texas, El Paso, or Alabama. Now the Alabama game is by far the biggest price for a fan. I wonder why, Peter Kovacs.
Well, I think it's obvious, and for one thing, to be the best, you got to beat the best, and LSU has done that a couple of times, but mostly it's been disappointing. Also, you know, technology completely changed, you know, the way the resale ticket market works, and so if you were in the LSU athletic department, you know, you're looking at these games and you're saying, look, we're selling, you know, the Texas El Paso game for the same amount as the Alabama game. But the guy who buys the ticket to the Alabama game is turning around and selling it for 10x what he paid us. And why don't we get that money? And frankly, that makes sense. I think it makes more sense for LSU to get the money than for private individuals to buy tickets and resell them.
Well, I'm looking at, we're talking about a big business, and LSU Sports, of course, is when it comes to the business aspect, is a professional organization rather than an amateur lightweight. And in the New York Times, as in yesterday, it says, for years, professional sports organizations like the NBA, Major League Baseball, prohibited liquor companies from buying advertising and locations in stadiums and arenas that could be seen on television in deference to efforts to curb drunken driving. But in 2009, during the depths of the worst recession since the Great Depression, those same leagues found themselves scrambling for cash. And so they began signing multimillion-dollar deals with companies that made rum, tequila, vodka, other hard liquor, and the advertising was displayed for all to see. For example, there's an official vodka now for LSU Sports and an official rum for LSU Sports. But now they're big into gambling, and the Super Bowl will actually be in Las Vegas. So is this a recipe for disaster, or does it really matter anymore?
Well, there was always gambling on sports in some ways, and you're never going to keep these leagues. This is a new revenue source. You're not going to keep these leagues away from that revenue source. You know, I remember when Louisiana was approving gambling in New Orleans, this was in the 90s, one of the questions was whether the NFL would put the Super Bowl in a town with a casino. And the NFL, this was even 1991, 1992, the NFL sort of signaled that it would look the other way. And it did, as long as there was no sports betting in that casino. And if you look at what happened in the past 30 years, you know, now LSU is in the town that invented, the NFL is in the town that invented sports betting. For a lot of young people, the NFL is something you bet on. You know, you can bet on your app in church if you want to.
You can bet on every play now too, which is
You can bet I always think sports, you know, the NFL and all these other sports have become more like horse racing. I mean, mm-hmm. horse racing basically exists for people to bet on it. And I feel like that's what's going to happen to sports.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And a listener a few days ago, Chelsea, noted, and it actually prompted my invitation to Peter, who's, of course, conversant, as you can hear, on any number of things, but about the Advocate a few years ago when the Hush Blackwell report came out, was all over that story, and now has been largely away from the headlines regarding any latest developments in the suit that Sharon Lewis, the former deputy athletic director, has brought. And there is a trial date set for next Monday in New Orleans. And the president and chancellor of LSU, William Tate IV, got deposed a few days ago. And yet the Advocate is not covering that story with the same zeal as it did when you were editor. Is that coincidence, or is that perhaps just a change in strategy? What do you make of it, Peter?
You know, I'm not involved, so I don't really know what led to the journalistic decisions about who gets deployed to cover what. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think as a matter of policy there's been any change. It'll be an interesting trial.
It will. Dominic in Grand Coteau. Dominic, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, man. I'm a firm believer that the Fourth Estate has kept this country as free as its military. That said, I'm deeply concerned about the that sideline reporter who made up quotes from the coach. Yes, it's only sports ball. It's only a coach. But the fact that she thought she could do this is troublesome, and I think it doesn't bode well for the business of journalism and newspapers everywhere.
All right. Well, by the way, that's not the first time that's happened, but it may be one of the first times a reporter actually acknowledged it. It's basically just making up some non-offensive commentary to kind of get through the night. But Peter, that's a no-no in the world of journalism.
Yeah, and I was pleased to see. I was a little shocked that I don't know her name, and I don't generally pay attention to the sideline reporters. But I was pleased to see that what she did was routinely condemned. I have not heard whether her actual employer did anything or said anything about her comment, and I would think that they probably should. But frankly. You know, even sideline reporting at sports events, which I frankly don't think is, you know, I don't think that's a very important part of journalism, you know, yet at the same time, all parts of journalism should be conducted honestly to reflect on all of journalism. But I was shocked when I saw that, because like it seemed completely unnecessary to make something up.
Well, I, as a student at LSU, I remember Alabama beat LSU 3-0 in Tiger Stadium in 1979. Crimson Tide had to win that game to win the national title. Well, some of us were in the locker room with Bear Bryant, and I actually had a recorder, and there was a guy working for Sports Information, I won't name him, a fellow student who was assigned to get quotes for the media from Bear Bryant. Well, he comes back and he tells Paul Manasseh, he says, Mr. Manasseh, Coach Bryant was unintelligible. I can't understand what he was saying. And Paul said, this is unacceptable. And so he comes down to me and he says, you got a tape? I says, I do. And he says, we listen and you still can't understand what he's saying. So he makes up these quotes about great grudge match and lucky to get out of here with a victory. And those actually appeared in newspapers. The next
day. Well, you know, I lived in Alabama, and I remember that game, and I lived in Alabama And I will say that that may have been a problem in Louisiana, but folks in Alabama understood what Coach Bryant was saying. I never heard that in Alabama.
Well, this is true. Another listener asked about obits, and this is covered in a New York Times editorial about Henry Kissinger, saying the best obituaries of the diplomat have emphasized his role in spreading misery. Now, for most of these famous people like Kissinger, the obits are already written before they expire, and that's true.
Especially when you're 100 years old.
That's sure right, are. But most of the time, like Sandra Day O'Connor, there was nothing in any story I read that was really critical at all about some of the controversial decisions she was involved in, and some on 5-4 votes. But what's the philosophy on writing obits?
Obituaries are challenging. A lot of news organizations have pre-written obituaries. The Picayune and the Advocate did, and probably, still do. One thing I found with obituaries is that the public, I don't know how to say this, the public wants a higher level of kindness in obituaries than in news stories. And that's always challenging. It's particularly challenging with obituaries for people who were convicted of things. But I don't know in the case of Sandra Day O'Connor and Henry Kissinger whether that would be expected.
Well,
in local news.
Imagine the obit when former President Trump dies. It'll be something to behold, and I suspect there are already obits in the can for him if something were to happen to him. But I mentioned how we're in the age where journalism is a business and selling is important. Readership and mostly listenership of news programs is down over the last few years, and I think the main reason is that Trump's no longer president. So as much as many members of the media revile Donald Trump, he is good for business, isn't he?
I always say that Donald Trump was good for the New York Times, and the New York Times was good for Donald Trump. Having a good adversary is sometimes helpful to both sides. And he was. And in fact, there was some criticism of, I think, CNN and some of the TV networks, which had broadcast his rallies, kind of unchallenged and unedited and in ways that they didn't do for other more conventional candidates because the viewership was great.
Well, Peter, we do have to roll, but it's always good to catch up with you, and I look forward to another visit with you again soon. Thank you, my friend.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, your number, 877-217-5757, and we're here for our monthly visit with Fred Columbus Dent III.
Yep.
And some of us knew his father well, who's now been gone on, hard to believe, 13 and a half years almost. But Fred Dent is a guy who went to New York City, as we know, in October of 1987. He was having his baptism on Wall Street on Black Monday. And he lived to fight another day. And Fred is one who follows the economy and the markets here in Baton Rouge now, but has clients all over the United States. I suspect even some foreign clients.
Three continents.
Yep. So let's go for all of them. Antarctica?
Phone calls are cheap now. So. FaceTime and WhatsApp.
Yeah. But what about now? It's so easy to do it on your own. In the old days, you needed to go through a broker and all this, but now you can basically do it the same way you can gamble on ball games.
Oh, yeah.
Does that hurt your business?
Many people are biased to be do-it-yourselfers, and that's fine. I encourage them to go out and do that. Some people would rather delegate the worry, the analysis, the plan to a professional who's competent. And so, no, it doesn't really hurt our business.
Well, you, of course, are a person who has to follow not only economic trends, but political trends and the mood of the country. And I did see a report last week that was encouraging that consumer confidence is actually up, and that means that holiday spending may be up, which, of course, will be good for the economy. But right now, most economic indicators show the economy is doing relatively well. We have high inflation, but it's lower than it was, and it's much lower than it is in other parts of the world.
And it's coming down.
It's Inflation's coming down. But yet, even among Democrats, there's this perception that Bidenomics is not working. In fact, this is for younger people, even more so than older people, which is surprising. 18 to 29, do you trust Joe Biden or Donald Trump to do a better job with the economy? 34% say Biden and 62% say Trump.
Let me talk about that from an investment perspective. We're going into an election year, and historically, the primaries have been volatile in terms of the stock market activity. However, after the primaries are open, on average, the S&P 500 is up 11% in the following 12 months, regardless of who's won the primary. Actually, after the presidential election, regardless of who's won the election, it's equal with Democrats and Republicans from a statistical basis. And a lot of people I hear say things like, well, I'm just going to sit on the sidelines until all this is over, or I don't like this guy. He's going to win. It's going to be ruinous for the country. And if you do that, history is against you, because in the last 20 elections, the S&P 500 has only been negative twice after the last 20 elections, and that was during 2000.
What about during an election year?
Well, during an election year, it's usually positive after the primaries are over. Election years are usually the year prior to an election year and the election year are typically the two positive years in the presidential election cycle, whereas the first 2 years of a president's term, those are usually negative, because now all of the promises are being settled in, and many of them don't come true.
877-217-5757 for Fred Dent, financial analyst, and he is here surveying the landscape, and we are now 11 months away from an election, and it's likely, unless something changes, likely to be 82-year-old Joe Biden and 78-year-old Donald Trump, and one of them will be elected president of the United States of America. That's where we are. But Trump, who had the largest deficits in American history and increased the debt by $8 trillion in 4 years, he did do something that I think benefited him and in the short term benefited investors, is that every time there was an interest rate, and there were a few during his tenure, he would rail and scream and yell at the Fed, and they tamped it down. Biden largely stays away from that, saying this is for the professionals. I'm not going to get involved. We're just going to see where this goes. And inflation has come down with these interest rates. But probably in the short term, stocks have been hurt by higher interest rates. So how much can a chief executive make a difference if he or she is screaming and yelling and complaining when the Fed does things that probably hurt their electoral viability?
Yeah, well, the Fed rules over the screaming and yelling by the president. But what I'm noticing is that there's $5.7 trillion of cash sitting on the sidelines in money market funds, yielding somewhere between 4 and 5%. As inflation ebbs, those yields are going to come down. And we often work with people who say, I've got all this cash, what should I do? Well, the time is to be invested before the interest rates come down. And so where are the values? Well, right now it's probably not in technology stocks in the S&P 500, but it is in a well-diversified portfolio. Emerging market stocks, they're at the lowest levels versus the S&P 500 than they've been in my whole 36-year career. Small cap stocks are the cheapest that they've been in the last 20 years. So there's a lot of Black Friday sales going on in the stock market right now where interest or money can be deployed. And certainly rebalance, because a lot of people have made money in technology stocks in the S&P 500, and it may be time to trim back some of those sales and redeploy it into the undervalued areas.
Well, you mentioned $5.7 trillion on the sidelines ready to be invested, which would be a big boon for Wall Street. But the U.S. national debt now, as we speak, and I'm looking at the numbers change as I speak, $33,890,000,000. That's the U.S. national debt going up. $100,845 per per citizen and $259,949 per taxpayer in the United States. Is that in the danger zone, or is this just part of living that we're going to have debt?
This is a big problem that needs to be solved. But what I always fall back on is that the second strongest force in the world after love is human ingenuity. And human ingenuity, the only way to tap into that and create wealth out of it is to be invested in equities or stocks. And so that will be largely driven by stock companies' profits. And those are paid out to the shareholder, and they rise over time. That's the place to be.
Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on Talk Louisiana with Fred Dent. Hi, Stuart.
Jim, Mr. Dent, and the audience, good morning as always. Happy holidays to all. Mr. Dent, not to seem racist, as a gentleman of color, speaking of myself, what is it about this Trump creature that is so galvanizing to people? He's a criminal. He's bombastic. He's disrespectful. He's not. Doesn't appear to be well researched in global politics. He's nasty. He's just a tyrant. What is it about this individual that people love so much? Why would they want this type of image representing the most powerful country in the world?
You're asking the wrong guy. I'm a wealth manager, investment advisor. That's a psychologist.
You have thoughts, but Stuart, you remember J.R. Ewing in Dallas? No, he was a bad guy on television, but he was a fictional character, and I rooted for him. Now, if he were real, I probably wouldn't have rooted for him as much, or maybe not at all, but Trump is basically ruling the roost. 40% of the country is the bad guy. Professional wrestling, same kind of concept. Bobby the Brain Heenan, as my friend David in Atlanta once said, Bobby's mantra was, win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat. So we're in the age where we love entertainment. And as I said with Peter Kovacs, as much as liberals revile Donald Trump, he was good for business. MSNBC's numbers were a lot higher under Trump than they are under Biden. New York Times was selling more newspapers under Trump than they are under Biden. And you take MSNBC, which I watch, they're all over George Santos, all over him, all over the guy. But yet they gave Michael Avenatti a pass when he got in trouble, who was a regular guest. They're giving Bob Menendez a pass, the senator from New Jersey. They're playing favorites just like Fox News does, and it's unfortunate because I think Americans are being slanted one way or the other because we watch things often because we want reinforcement, and that's why I watch all kinds of programs from the left, the right, and in between. But Fred Dent, we're in a world in which Donald Trump is still the person who, according to some, is the panacea for the economy. I remember an investment I had at Merrill Lynch back in 1988 told me that this is 1988 when Reagan was president, saying, you know, this deficit, everything could be wiped away if we elected Donald Trump president. He was 40. But he was 40 in 1988. He was on the scene even then as a guy, only I can solve your problems. That's what he said in this 2016 address.
2016, was he saying that back 2008?
And 1988. He was on the scene then, yeah. Oh, go back to the old tapes. When he was on CNN and they asked him his favorite book, he said, Vanities of the Bonfire.
Tom Wolfe, right?
Yeah, I think it's Bonfire of the Vanities,
indeed,
too.
Yeah.
And why'd you like it? Oh, it was good. It was really good. It was good. It was good. It was good. But I think we're going to be talking a lot about the former president. Our friend Andy Anderson, hopefully we'll have back soon. I understand, according to somebody in his camp, that he is, at least for the time being, into bonds, which surprised me. But some people, even brave and fearless people like Andy Anderson, sometimes go conservative. Why would he be doing that at this time?
Well, he sees an opportunity to profit. The thing about bonds is, if you believe interest rates are going down, that is the place to be. But when you told me this before we went on the air today, I felt like I was in a dream.
Okay, well, we need to see if Andy will come in with Fred next month. But until tomorrow, we thank you for listening. Subaru Baton Rouge provides signature support.